Good afternoon. Getting better. Let's try it again. Good afternoon. Welcome to Unity Church. We are a church committed to welcoming all people, regardless of gender identity or sexual orientation. All are welcome here. I want to extend a special welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. If you're visiting, we encourage you to sign our visitor's book in the cloister by the name tags or at the welcome table in the parish hall so that we can stay in touch with you. We also invite you to take one of our classes designed for newcomers and those considering membership, such as our Finding Yourself at Unity, which is being offered October 11th, 18th, and 25th. You can sign up for this class at the welcome table or by calling the church. We hope you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you find and keep your balance, a place which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. I'd like to call your attention, as we do each week, to This Week at Unity, at the insert in your order service, which seeks to inform you of upcoming events here at Unity and serve as an invitation and a roadmap to deeper involvement. As always, we make an announcement of what's coming up in Wellspring Wednesday, and this week, our featured class at our Wellspring Wednesday programming is The Nature of American Life, led by Professor James Farrell. This presentation explores how Americans think about nature and why we love nature but destroy it at the same time. Combining ecology and religion, this class will explore the moral ecology of everyday life and the ways that people of faith can make a difference in nurturing nature for future generations. Of course, you are invited to attend dinner, which is at 6, followed by a brief worship service, and classes and other programs begin at 7:10. If you'd like to attend the Wellspring Wednesday meal, we ask that you please sign up and reserve a spot at the Wellspring Wednesday table. Tomorrow night at 7 p.m., nationally recognized speaker Ruth Hayden will give a presentation entitled Money and Values, Living a Regret-Free Life. The cost for this presentation is $5, and we hope to see many of you there. And next Saturday, October 13th at 8 a.m., we hope you'll join us for the first of our monthly pancake breakfasts. And following the service this afternoon, please join us for a soup dinner in the parish hall where you can connect with friends, new and old, as well as learn more about our faith community. Next Sunday is Celebration Sunday, when we renew our financial commitments to our church community. We are thrilled that we are going to have a rich offering of music that Sunday, and the Eclectics, the adult choir, and the youth choir will be sharing their talents for the 9 and 11 o'clock service, and Peter Mayer will be here at the 4:30 service, so we are delighted. In addition to all this rich music, the guest preacher will be Rosemary Bray McNatt, and she will be addressing her considerable preaching talent by addressing how does our faith endure. Services are at 9 and 11 and at 4:30. We hope all of you can attend. Karen and I would like to greet you following the service at the Portland Avenue doors, and once again, welcome to Unity Church.
Saraswati namastubhyam
varade kamarupine
Saraswati namastubhyam
varade
Saraswati namastubhyam varade kamarupini vidyarambham karishyami siddhir bhavatu me sada. Saraswati namastubhyam varade kamarupini vidya
To believe your own thought, to believe that what is true for you in your private heart is true for all, that is genius. Come, let us worship together. Remain standing and join with me in reading the unison reading number 487 in the back of your hymnal. The bell is full of wind, though it does not ring. The bird is full of flight, though it is still. The sky is full of clouds, though it is alone. The word is full of voice, though no one speaks it. Everything is full of fleeing, though there are no roads. Everything is fleeing towards its presence. Thank you. time we gather for worship, we set aside time to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this sacred place. Our hearts are with all those who live with grief or chronic pain, for illnesses seen and unseen, those who live with addiction, those who live with mental illness, those who care for family members in ill health, and those who knowingly face their final days. We celebrate the life and mourn the death of Daphne Birdall, who died this Friday. A service to honor Daphne's life will be held this coming Friday at 4:00 in the sanctuary. We also send our healing thoughts and prayers to Daphne's family, her parents, her sisters, her young daughters, and her husband, and her colleagues at the U. We send healing thoughts to Virginia Lanigren, who is home recovering from a perforated ulcer. Her recovery is going well, but she isn't used to being slowed down by anything, as those of us who know her know so well. And we also send healing thoughts to Avery, niece of Donna and Jack Medved, who at age 5 is living with brain cancer. May our healing thoughts and prayers provide strength to her and her family. And we hold Jessica and Guy Peterson, their son Caden, in our healing thoughts and prayers. Jessica is pregnant with twins, was hospitalized but is home now, but still on bed rest and waiting for the arrival of the twins. And we are thrilled to announce the arrival of Jolt, a new healthy baby boy that was born to our partner minister, Kinga Reka, 9 days ago. And may we stand in compassionate solidarity with our neighbors all around the world who suffer in the midst of habitual violence. May they and we be instruments of a lasting peace. I now invite you to share the names of those people you would like to celebrate, memorialize, or hold in the embrace of this beloved community. For the names which have been spoken, and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, may we be forever grateful for this tapestry we weave together. And now will you join with me in a moment of meditation and prayer. God of many names and beyond all naming, may we experience our connection with an enduring and abiding spirit within us and among us. May we cultivate an interior life that enables us to experience a graciousness of spirit as it moves over the mysteries of living and dying. May we find ways to translate that spirit into a gracious hospitality that ripples out into the world. May our passions be released, our confidence renewed, our arrogance tempered by humility. May our lives always be grounded in gratitude for this precious life, in the recognition that those that are given much are asked for much in return. May it be so, and amen. Thank you. The offering today goes to Minnesota Helps, once again, an organization that is helping with flood relief to those victims of the floods in southern Minnesota. The collection today will be going directly to in-home daycare centers, many of which have closed down since the flood, and it has meant that people who put their children in those daycare centers have been unable to return to work. So sending our resources to help these in-home daycare centers get up and running again is vitally important. So I encourage you to give as generously as you can. Would the ushers please come forward? To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate our lives and our many offerings. Thank you. I'd like to now invite Megan McKenzie to come up and share her testimonial with the congregation.
Thank you. As she said, my name is Megan McKenzie. I have been attending Unity Church since I was enrolled in the preschool program by my parents, David and Kathy. As a young UU, the religious education program challenged me to explore the world religions, unlike the churches of some of my friends. Perhaps in part, this comfort with other religions is why I considered other churches and other religions at different times during my life. I considered Lutheranism, Buddhism, Catholicism, and other Unitarian Universalist churches. But after these explorations, Unitarian Universalism at Unity Unitarian of St. Paul has still felt like the best fit. In fact, I even said that during my coming-of-age speech, standing right here 13 years ago. This is the place where I felt most challenged, educated, supported, and of course, at home. The best of the Sunday sermons here have been as engaging as great college lectures, which is what I would tell my friends wondering why I was so excited to get home during college to come to church. Apparently, that wasn't the thing that most college kids did on their weekends. But I got so much out of listening to the sermons, sometimes taking notes and occasionally buying sermon tapes to be able to further those thoughts that were said during sermons. How many churches actually have people who want to buy the sermons later? At services, I regained a renewed vigor for living out my values. After college, church became that touchstone my week, refreshing my spiritual self, and of course, it didn't hurt that my parents took me out to lunch every afternoon, too. A few years later, having become semi-regular at Unity again, I stumbled into membership in an amazing young adult covenant group. 4 years later, now acting as their group leader, I've come to understand how this church deepens a member through those small groups, which work as more intimate extensions of the supporting and challenging Unity Unitarian Church community. It was the members of my covenant group, in fact, who finally asked, "Why not?" challenging me to make my lifelong Unity membership official last February. And when I became official, I was not content just to drop dollars into the collection plate on Sundays, but I needed to, and so made, an official pledge of financial support as well. Not out of guilt or obligation, but out of love, I have decided to include Unity, its services, and its programs among the things for which my teacher's salary must stretch to pay. This year, I have made a sustaining pledge of 5% of my income to the church. As one of my best friends likes to say, you get what you pay for. I want to continue to be able to say that I'm getting a better quality me from this church and its extensions. I hope each of you who are members and those of you who are considering becoming official give as generously as you are able this year at Pledge. Thank you.
From The Good Earth by Pearl S. Buck. Then in the evening, he stood in the doorway of his house and looked across the land, his own land, lying loose and fresh from the winter's freezing and ready for planting. It was full spring, and in the shallow pool, the frogs croaked drowsily. The bamboos at the corner of the house swayed slowly under a gentle night wind. And through the twilight, he could see dimly the fringe of trees at the border of the near field. They were peach trees, budded most delicately pink, and willow trees thrusting forth tender green leaves. And up from the quiescent waiting land, a faint mist rose, silver as moonlight, and clung about the tree trunks. At first, and for a long time, it seemed to Wang Lung that he wished to see no human being, but only to be alone on his land. Then Wang Lung set himself robustly to the soil, and he begrudged even the hours he must spend in the house for food and sleep. He loved rather to take his roll of bread and garlic to the field and stand there eating, planning, and thinking. Here shall I put the black-eyed peas, and here the young rice beds. And if he grew too weary in the day, he laid himself into a furrow, and there, with the good warmth of his own land against his flesh, he slept.
On the Road to Delphi by New Jersey poet Linda Paston. Tourists beware, the sacred bay of Corinth is charged with aluminum. At the crossroads, almost invisible Oedipus waits. Have an offering ready and a sacrifice. You may ask one question, be specific. The answer has always been the same. Look for it among the broken stones under your sandal or in the unbroken light of the Mediterranean sky. And remember this, virgins were said to be unreliable. So they chose as priestess a woman of a certain age. By the moon, you Your flesh is the color of marble. You are that age now. I'd like to begin by apologizing for how warm it is in the sanctuary. It must be obvious to all of you that we've had a malfunctioning air conditioning system for the last 24 hours. So it's cooler than it was at 11. There's the good news. But again, we apologize for any inconvenience, and you're not wearing a robe, so you're in a better position than some of us. I begin with a story. A young earnest monk wanted to study with the wisest teacher. And he decided that he would dedicate himself to finding that teacher. He wanted to find enlightenment as soon as possible. And he traveled from monastery to monastery looking for the wisest teacher, a true master to show him the way. And he asked everyone he met in each monastery that he attended or lived in, who do you think is the wisest teacher? And then following up on their advice, he would submit to studying with that master. But after some time of studying with them, he would grow impatient and weary and restless, and inevitably he would move on. But each time that he would ask people for who they thought was the wisest teacher, he would get a variety of answers, but there was one master, one teacher whose name kept coming up. And he didn't go to that monastery because it was in a very remote region, and it took a long time, a very long and arduous journey to get to that master. But after some time, he decided he had to go. And he took on the journey, and it took him many, many months of hard travel to reach this remote monastery. But he arrived, and he introduced himself to the teacher. And letting go of all niceties, he got right to the real question, stating, "I have entered this monastery to learn from your wise teaching. Will you please show me how to enter the way?" "Do you hear the sound of the valley stream?" the master answered. "Yes, of course," answered the monk. "Enter there." Listening to the stream, "Do you mean to say that the way that could have been present to the monk all along?" The monk had passed so many such valley streams in his journeys. "Do you think he found the way? Or do you suppose that he once again grew frustrated and kept looking for that elusive, perfect teacher who would provide the answer he sought? And I wonder, would he ever find the answer, because he always was looking outside himself for that answer, when the answer clearly was, stop, pay attention, the way is here." Now, before I begin talking about the sources of faith, I want to define faith for those of you who haven't been present
for our other Dimension of Faith series. Faith is not a commodity that you either have or you don't, and it doesn't require a belief system and is not dependent on a deity, though it doesn't deny one. It's an inner quality that unfolds as we learn to trust our deepest experiences. Faith is a lantern that lights our way, Rob said last week. I said the week before that, faith is what gets us out of bed and helps us take the next step when the way is hard and we are unsure of ourselves. It is how we structure our lives, and as the Buddhists say, it is where we place our heart. It's trust and confidence. It is a quality of faithful living, which implies an openness to life in all its changes and challenges and connections. Now, in Western society, I believe we've been acculturated to see faith exactly as a commodity, something you have or you don't have. We've been raised to believe that faithful people accept a particular version of the truth as real and valid. Outside sources, in other words, communicate what is true, false, and when you think about it, actually what is even possible in a person's life. Outside sources, then, are the true arbiter and authority. They define our lives, and when, like the monk, we are looking for guidance outside ourselves, and it's only human nature to do so. Often we look outside ourselves for answers. But we have been led to believe that faithful people accept the ideologies and doctrines that are handed down as true, and faithless people don't. The problem with this kind of thinking is that there's no room for internal discernment about what feels true and that which does not. The interesting thing about Unitarian Universalism, however, is that it evolved in a very different direction in its relationship to outside authority. Its emphasis has always been, pretty much from the very beginning, not on outside sources, but on individual perceptions. But our faith has, I believe, not done a good job at helping people understand what that responsibility entails. So often when you're driving and you see the bumper sticker, question authority, when you see that bumper sticker, you can pretty much predict that it was purchased at a Unitarian Universalist church bookstore. We're very good at questioning authority, but I don't believe we have learned the corresponding response to that, which is trust and confidence in our own inner wisdom. And it is a give and take. And when we reject outside authority simply because it's coming from the outside, we cut ourselves off from so very much. For centuries, people traveled to the Oracle of Delphi, looking for answers to life's perennial questions. And they presented themselves to the Oracle. Now, to get to the Oracle, which is in northern Greece, they would have to travel by boat and then climb, like the monk, an arduous trail up to where the oracle was. And they presented themselves to the oracle, which was a priestess of a particular age, trained in trance and other celestial arts. But interestingly enough, before encountering the oracle, the seeker passed by an engraved stone that was impossible to miss as you approached the oracle. And these words lent advice to the seeker of the oracle's wisdom. And these words were, know thyself. Not listen carefully, not behold the truth, but listen carefully. Know thyself. Know thyself. And this ancient counsel rings true, to hear the truth, to To understand if it is true, we must first search out our heart to know our motives and our understandings and our assumptions in the world. When we place our faith entirely on the outside, we can be blown around like leaves on a windy day. We're not anchored in our own experience, and what our intuition and our own inner wisdom tells us is true. We place our faith entirely on others, rather than remembering the need for faith in our own understanding. And when we do that, if we do that, we can end up caught in structures and life patterns that I believe are not life-enhancing. Now, please don't hear me saying that going to outside sources for answers is wrong. It's not. For every sermon I write, I read, and I research, and I ruminate, I talk to friends, I have in-depth conversations with worship associates. I couldn't be in the ministry, and I believe no one could, without continually learning from others. We talk about truth and faith emerging in conversation that comes out of being in community with others. And this is a source of faith for me. But it's always through my own inner discernment. Discerning what your inner truth is about the openness of the interaction between inner and outer sources. It is to work with intention on your own interior life, to nourish it with the nutrients of others' insights and wisdom. But the growth of your interior life can't be dependent on only that, but must rely on your efforts to keep digging so that the deep nutrients that already, perhaps unrecognized in your own life, interact powerfully and positively with these outside sources, these outside nutrients. One of the themes of our sabbatical was hospitality. And one of the surprises for me was how much hospitality we received in our travels and how often the hospitality really was about an openness to grace. I learned something that doesn't come naturally to me, which is, in the words of the remarkable teacher and minister, Dr. James Forbes, how to make a place for grace. Now, grace kept coming unbidden through everything that we did. And you know what? Much to my surprise, it keeps coming. And I'm home now. And I figure it should stop. But it doesn't. Or is it that I'm seeing things with different eyes? That grace happens all the time. But I just have the faith in that possibility. So I didn't see it when it may indeed have been around me, flowing through my life all the time. Howard Thurman, another remarkable theologian and minister, said to behold truth, one must look at the world with quiet eyes. With quiet eyes, we can see our interconnectedness. With quiet eyes, we can see and experience grace. With quiet eyes, we can see the patterns of connections that make up our interior life and sustain our spiritual quests. The sources of faith are many. Our experiences, the best of faith traditions from which we came, the faith tradition we embrace now in the present, the teachings we seek out in the world, and those teachings that fall into our lives simply through conversation with friends, and sometimes strangers. And, of course, the small, still voice within. Developing faith in this challenging world is a matter of deep discernment. And the give and take between what is inside and outside. If we are a people of strong faith, then we are people committed to an open relationship to the world and to the holy. This is what Ralph Waldo Emerson believed so strongly, that we deserve and should cultivate a direct relationship with the holy. Now, this is all well and good, but recognize that that places responsibility of discernment, deep discernment, on our shoulders. The old adage, to stop and smell the roses, to look at the world with quiet eyes, if you will, isn't just about slowing down your life. It's about letting the world enter you, letting yourself come into relationship with it, taking the time to be changed by it. And of course, if we do that, it's not just the roses, and it's not just things that are pleasant that enter our life. Having faith doesn't mean not making an effort. When we are trying to create change, we can pour ourselves into the endeavor and do our best to accomplish our goal. The gift of faith is that it allows us to make that intensity of effort, but it's guided by a more holistic vision of life with all its mutability, dislocation, and unruliness. Whatever takes us to our edge, to our outer limits, leads us to the heart of life's mystery. And there we find faith. In India, we met life-changing visionaries, and one of these people, Vivek Pandit, will be here with us in November. Vivek has devoted his entire adult life to freeing slaves. He says that the most important thing he has to say to these indentured servants is this: you are free. No one can take away your personal and internal freedom. And it's from this recognition of internal truth that begins to transform the lives of these people. As the head of the Union of Former Slaves said to us in a meeting with him, "I was born in a cattle shed. I was raised to believe that I was actually lower than the cattle in the shed. I learned growing up that I was an animal and not a human being. Mr. Vivek Pandit taught me that I was a human being. And now everyone in this union is learning that they are human beings." We listened to these tribal children singing songs, saying prayers, with the line, "We are human beings."
Good afternoon. Getting better. Let's try it again. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to Unity Church. We are a church committed to welcoming all people, regardless of gender identity or sexual orientation. All are welcome here. I want to extend a special welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. If you're visiting, we encourage you to sign our visitor's book in the cloister by the name tags or at the welcome table in the parish hall so that we can stay in touch with you. We also invite you to take one of our classes designed for newcomers and those considering membership, such as our Finding Yourself at Unity, which is being offered October 11th, 18th, and 25th. You can sign up for this class at the welcome table or by calling the church. We hope you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you find and keep your balance, a place which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. I'd like to call your attention, as we do each week, to This Week at Unity, at the insert in your order service, which seeks to inform you of upcoming events here at Unity and serve as an invitation and a roadmap to deeper involvement. As always, we make an announcement of what's coming up in Wellspring Wednesday, and this week, our featured class at our Wellspring Wednesday programming is The Nature of American Life, led by Professor James Farrell. This presentation explores how Americans think about nature and why we love nature but destroy it at the same time. Combining ecology and religion, this class will explore the moral ecology of everyday life and the ways that people of faith can make a difference in nurturing nature for future generations. Of course, you are invited to attend dinner, which is at 6, followed by a brief worship service, and classes and other programs begin at 7:10. If you'd like to attend the Wellspring Wednesday meal, we ask that you please sign up and reserve a spot at the Wellspring Wednesday table. Tomorrow night at 7 p.m., nationally recognized speaker Ruth Hayden will give a presentation entitled Money and Values, Living a Regret-Free Life. The cost for this presentation is $5, and we hope to see many of you there. And next Saturday, October 13th at 8 a.m., we hope you'll join us for the first of our monthly pancake breakfasts. And following the service this afternoon, please join us for a soup dinner in the parish hall where you can connect with friends, new and old, as well as learn more about our faith community. Next Sunday is Celebration Sunday, when we renew our financial commitments to our church community. We are thrilled that we are going to have a rich offering of music that Sunday, and the Eclectics, the adult choir, and the youth choir will be sharing their talents for the 9 and 11 o'clock service, and Peter Mayer will be here at the 4:30 service, so we are delighted. In addition to all this rich music, the guest preacher will be Rosemary Bray McNatt, and she will be addressing her considerable preaching talent by addressing how does our faith endure. Services are at 9 and 11 and at 4:30. We hope all of you can attend. Karen and I would like to greet you following the service at the Portland Avenue doors, and once again, welcome to Unity Church.
Saraswati, Saraswati, Namastubhyam,
Varade Kamarupine,
Saraswati, Namastubhyam,
Varade.
Yeah.
To believe your own thought, to believe that what is true for you in your private heart is true for all, that is genius. Come, let us worship together.
Remain standing and join with me in reading the unison reading number 487 in the back of your hymnal. The bell is full of wind, though it does not ring. The bird is full of flight, though it is still. The sky is full of clouds, though it is alone. The word is full of voice, though no one speaks it. Everything is full of fleeing, though there are no roads. Everything is fleeing towards its presence. Thank you. Every time we gather for worship, we set aside time to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this sacred place. Our hearts are with all those who live with grief or chronic pain, for illnesses seen and unseen, those who live with addiction, those who live with mental illness, those who care for family members in ill health, and those who knowingly face their final days. We celebrate the life and mourn the death of Daphne Birdall, who died this Friday. A service to honor Daphne's life will be held this coming Friday at 4:00 in the sanctuary. We also send our healing thoughts and prayers to Daphne's family, her parents, her sisters, her young daughters, and her husband, and her colleagues at the U. We send healing thoughts to Virginia Lanigren, who is home recovering from a perforated ulcer. Her recovery is going well, but she isn't used to being slowed down by anything, as those of us who know her know so well. And we also send healing thoughts to Avery, niece of Donna and Jack Medved, who at age 5 is living with brain cancer. May our healing thoughts and prayers provide strength to her and her family. And we hold Jessica and Guy Peterson, their son Caden, in our healing thoughts and prayers. Jessica is pregnant with twins, was hospitalized but is home now, but still on bed rest and waiting for the arrival of the twins. And we are thrilled to announce the arrival of Jolt, a new healthy baby boy that was born to our partner minister, Kangareka, 9 days ago. And may we stand in compassionate solidarity with our neighbors all around the world who suffer in the midst of habitual violence. May they and we be instruments of a lasting peace. I now invite you to share the names of those people you would like to celebrate, memorialize, or hold in the embrace of this beloved community. For the names which have been spoken, and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, may we be forever grateful for this tapestry we weave together. And now will you join with me in a moment of meditation and prayer. God of many names and beyond all naming, may we experience our connection with an enduring and abiding spirit within us and among us. May we cultivate an interior life that enables us to experience a graciousness of spirit as it moves over the mysteries of living and dying. May we find ways to translate that spirit into a gracious hospitality that ripples out into the world. May our passions be released, our confidence renewed, our arrogance tempered by humility. May our lives always be grounded in gratitude for this precious life, in the recognition that those that are given much are asked for much in return. May it be so, and amen.
Thank you.
Thank you. The offering today goes to Minnesota Helps, once again, an organization that is helping with flood relief to those victims of the floods in southern Minnesota. The collection today will be going directly to in-home daycare centers, many of which have closed down since the flood, and it has meant that people who put their children in those daycare centers have been unable to return to work. So sending our resources to help these in-home daycare centers get up and running again is vitally important. So I encourage you to give as generously as you can. Would the ushers please come forward? To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate our lives and our many offerings. Thank you.
Thank you.
like to now invite Megan McKenzie to come up and share her testimonial with the congregation.
Thank you. As she said, my name is Megan McKenzie. I have been attending Unity Church since I was enrolled in the preschool program by my parents, David and Kathy. As a young UU, the religious education program challenged me to explore the world religions, unlike the churches of some of my friends. Perhaps in part, this comfort with other religions is why I considered other churches and other religions at different times during my life. I considered Lutheranism, Buddhism, Catholicism, and other Unitarian Universalist churches. But after these explorations, Unitarian Universalism at Unity Unitarian of St. Paul has still felt like the best fit. In fact, I even said that during my coming-of-age speech, standing right here 13 years ago. This is the place where I felt most challenged, educated, supported, and of course, at home. The best of the Sunday sermons here have been as engaging as great college lectures, which is what I would tell my friends wondering why I was so excited to get home during college to come to church. Apparently, that wasn't the thing that most college kids did on their weekends. But I got so much out of listening to the sermons, sometimes taking notes and occasionally buying sermon tapes to be able to further those thoughts that were said during sermons. How many churches actually have people who want to buy the sermons later? At services, I regained a renewed vigor for living out my values. After college, church became that touchstone my week, refreshing my spiritual self, and of course, it didn't hurt that my parents took me out to lunch every afternoon, too. A few years later, having become a semi-regular at Unity again, I stumbled into membership in an amazing young adult covenant group. 4 years later, now acting as their group leader, I've come to understand how this church deepens a member through those small groups, which work as more intimate extensions of the supporting and challenging Unity Unitarian church community. It was the members of my covenant group, in fact, who finally asked, "Why not?" challenging me to make my lifelong Unity membership official last February. And when I became official, I was not content just to drop dollars into the collection plate on Sundays, but I needed to, and so made, an official pledge of financial support as well. Not out of guilt or obligation, but out of love, I have decided to include Unity, its services, and its programs among the things for which my teacher's salary must stretch to pay. This year, I have made a sustaining pledge of 5% of my income to the church. As one of my best friends likes to say, you get what you pay for. I want to continue to be able to say that I'm getting a better quality me from this church and its extensions. I hope each of you who are members and those of you who are considering becoming official give as generously as you are able this year at Pledge. Thank you.
From the Good Earth by Pearl S. Buck. Then in the evening, he stood in the doorway of his house and looked across the land, his own land, lying loose and fresh from the winter's freezing and ready for planting. It was full spring, and in the shallow pool, the frogs croaked drowsily. The bamboos at the corner of the house swayed slowly under a gentle night wind. And through the twilight, he could see dimly the fringe of trees at the border of the near field. They were peach trees, budded most delicately pink, and willow trees thrusting forth tender green leaves. And up from the quiescent waiting land, a faint mist rose, silver as moonlight, and clung about the tree trunks. At first, and for a long time, it seemed to Wang Lung that he wished to see no human being, but only to be alone on his land. Then Wang Lung set himself robustly to the soil, and he begrudged even the hours he must spend in the house for food and sleep. He loved rather to take his roll of bread and garlic to the field and stand there eating, planning, and thinking. Here shall I put the black-eyed peas, and here the young rice beds. And if he grew too weary, in the day, he laid himself into a furrow, and there, with the good warmth of his own land against his flesh, he slept.
On the Road to Delphi by New Jersey poet Linda Paston. Tourists beware, the sacred bay of Corinth is charged with aluminum. At the crossroads, almost invisible Oedipus waits. Have an offering ready and a sacrifice. You may ask one question, be specific. The answer has always been the same. Look for it among the broken stones under your sandal or in the unbroken light of the Mediterranean sky. And remember this, virgins were said to be unreliable, so they chose as priestess a woman of a certain age. By the moon, your flesh is the color of marble. You are that age now. I'd like to begin by apologizing for how warm it is in the sanctuary. It must be obvious to all of you that we've had a malfunctioning air conditioning system for the last 24 hours. So it's cooler than it was at 11. There's the good news. But again, we apologize for any inconvenience, and you're not wearing a robe, so you're in a better position than some of us. I begin with a story. A young, earnest monk wanted to study with the wisest teacher. And he decided that he would dedicate himself to finding that teacher. He wanted to find enlightenment as soon as possible. And he traveled from monastery to monastery looking for the wisest teacher, a true master to show him the way. And he asked everyone he met in each monastery that he attended or lived in, who do you think is the wisest teacher? And then following up on their advice, he would submit to studying with that master. But after some time of studying with them, he would grow impatient and weary and restless, and inevitably he would move on. But each time that he would ask people for who they thought was the wisest teacher, he would get a variety of answers, but there was one master, one teacher whose name kept coming up. And he didn't go to that monastery because it was in a very remote region, and it took a long time, a very long and arduous journey to get to that master. But after some time, he decided he had to go. And he took on the journey, and it took him many, many months of hard travel to reach this remote monastery. But he arrived, and he introduced himself to the teacher. And letting go of all niceties, he got right to the real question, stating, "I have entered this monastery to learn from your wise teaching. Will you please show me how to enter the way?"
Do you hear the sound of the valley stream? The master answered. Yes, of course, answered the monk. Enter there. Listening to the stream? Do you mean to say that the way that could have been present to the monk all along? The monk had passed so many such valley streams in his journeys. Do you think he found the way? Or do you suppose that he once again grew frustrated and kept looking for that elusive, perfect teacher who would provide the answer he sought? And I wonder, would he ever find the answer? Because he always was looking outside himself for that answer. When the answer clearly was, stop, pay attention, the way is here. Now, before I begin talking about the sources of faith, I want to define faith for those of you who haven't been present for our other Dimension of Faith series. Faith is not a commodity that you either have or you don't, and it doesn't require a belief system and is not dependent on a deity, though it doesn't deny one. It's an inner quality that unfolds as we learn to trust our deepest experiences. Faith is a lantern that lights our way, Rob said last week. I said the week before that, faith is what gets us out of bed and helps us take the next step when the way is hard and we are unsure of ourselves. It is how we structure our lives. And as the Buddhists say, it is where we place our heart. It's trust and confidence. It is a quality of faithful living, which implies an openness to life in all its changes and challenges and connections. Now, in Western society, I believe we've been acculturated to see faith exactly as a commodity, something you have or you don't have. We've been raised to believe that faithful people accept a particular version of the truth as real and valid. Outside sources, in other words, communicate what is true, false, and when you think about it, actually what is even possible in a person's life. Outside sources, then, are the true arbiter and authority. They define our lives, and when, like the monk, we are looking for guidance outside ourselves. And it's only human nature to do so. Often we look outside ourselves for answers. But we have been led to believe that faithful people accept the ideologies and doctrines that are handed down as true, and faithless people don't. The problem with this kind of thinking is that there's no room for internal discernment about what feels true and that which does not. The interesting thing about Unitarian Universalism, however, is that it evolved in a very different direction in its relationship to outside authority. Its emphasis has always been, pretty much from the very beginning, not on outside sources, but on individual perception. But our faith has, I believe, not done a good job at helping people understand what that responsibility entails. So often when you're driving and you see the bumper sticker, question authority, when you see that bumper sticker, you can pretty much predict that it was purchased at a Unitarian Universalist church bookstore. We're very good at questioning authority. But I don't believe we have learned the corresponding response to that, which is trust and confidence in our own inner wisdom. And it is a give and take. And when we reject outside authority simply because it's coming from the outside, we cut ourselves off from so very much. For centuries, people traveled to the Oracle of Delphi, looking for answers to life's perennial questions. And they presented themselves to the oracle. Now, To get to the oracle, which is in northern Greece, they would have to travel by boat and then climb, like the monk, an arduous trail up to where the oracle was. And they presented themselves to the oracle, which was a priestess of a particular age, trained in trance and other celestial arts. But interestingly enough, before encountering the oracle, the seeker passed by an engraved stone that was impossible to miss as you approached the oracle. And these words lent advice to the seeker of the oracle's wisdom. And these words were, "Know thyself." Not listen carefully, not behold the truth, but listen carefully. Know thyself. Know thyself. And this ancient counsel rings true. To hear the truth, to understand if it is true, we must first search out our heart to know our motives and our understandings and our assumptions in the world. When we place our faith entirely on the outside, we can be blown around like leaves on a windy day. We're not anchored in our own experience. And what our intuition and our own inner wisdom tells us is true. We place our faith entirely on others, rather than remembering the need for faith in our own understanding. And when we do that, if we do that, we can end up caught in structures and life patterns that I believe are not life-enhancing. Now, please don't hear me saying that going to outside sources for answers is wrong. It's not. For every sermon I write, I read and I research and I ruminate, I talk to friends, I have in-depth conversations with worship associates. I couldn't be in the ministry, and I believe no one could, without continually learning from others. We talk about truth and faith emerging in conversation that comes out of being in community with others. And this is a source of faith for me. But it's always through my own inner discernment. Discerning what your inner truth is about the openness of the interaction between inner and outer sources. It is to work with intention on your own interior life, to nourish it with the nutrients of others' insights and wisdom. But the growth of your interior life can't be dependent on only that, but must rely on your efforts to keep digging so that the deep nutrients that already, perhaps unrecognized in your own life, interact powerfully and positively with these outside sources, these outside nutrients. One of the themes of our sabbatical was hospitality. And one of the surprises for me was how much hospitality we received in our travels and how often the hospitality really was about an openness to grace. I learned something that doesn't come naturally to me, which is, in the words of the remarkable teacher and minister, Dr. James Forbes, how to make a place for grace. Now, grace kept coming unbidden through everything that we did. And you know what? Much to my surprise, it keeps coming. And I'm home now, and I figure it should stop. But it doesn't. Or is it that I'm seeing things with different eyes, that grace happens all the time, but I just have the faith in that possibility. So I didn't see it when it may indeed have been around me, flowing through my life all the time. Howard Thurman, another remarkable theologian and minister, said to behold truth One must look at the world with quiet eyes. With quiet eyes, we can see our interconnectedness. With quiet eyes, we can see and experience grace. With quiet eyes, we can see the patterns of connections that make up our interior life and sustain our spiritual quests. The sources of faith are many. Our experiences, the best of faith traditions from which we came, the faith tradition we embrace now in the present, the teachings we seek out in the world, and those teachings that fall into our lives simply through conversation with friends and sometimes strangers. And, of course, the small, still voice within. Developing faith in this challenging world is a matter of deep discernment and the give and take between what is inside and outside. If we are a people of strong faith, then we are people committed to an open relationship to the world and to the holy. This is what Ralph Waldo Emerson believed so strongly, that we deserve and should cultivate a direct relationship with the holy. Now, this is all well and good, but recognize that that places responsibility of discernment, deep discernment, on our shoulders. The old adage, to stop and smell the roses, to look at the world with quiet eyes, if you will, isn't just about slowing down your life. It's about letting the world enter you, letting yourself come into relationship with it, taking the time to be changed by it. And of course, if we do that, it's not just the roses, and it's not just things that are pleasant that enter our life. Having faith doesn't mean not making an effort. When we are trying to create change, we can pour ourselves into the endeavor and do our best to accomplish our goal. The gift of faith is that it allows us to make that intensity of effort, but it's guided by a more holistic vision of life with all its mutability, dislocation, and unruliness. Whatever takes us to our edge, to our outer limits, leads us to the heart of life's mystery. And there we find faith. In India, we met life-changing visionaries, and one of these people, Vivek Pandit, will be here with us in November. Vivek has devoted his entire adult life to freeing slaves. He says that the most important thing he has to say to these indentured servants is this: you are free. No one can take away your personal and internal freedom. And it's from this recognition of internal truth that begins to transform the lives of these people. As the head of the union of former slaves said to us in a meeting with him, "I was born in a cattle shed. I was raised to believe that I was actually lower than the cattle in the shed. I learned growing up that I was an animal and not a human being. Mr. Vivek Pandit taught me that I was a human being. And now everyone in this union is learning that they are human beings." We listened to these tribal children singing songs, saying prayers with the line, "We are human beings," staking a claim for this relationship, which was new and transformative for them. The head of this union now heads a union of 150,000 people who he says have grown to believe that we are all human beings. Now, yes, Vivek was an outside source coming into the lives of thousands of people, but that's my very point. The interaction between external truths that ring like a bell when they resonate deep within us and match our own internal suspicions. And it's this interaction between the external and internal that can be so transformative, which is why we need to take them so seriously. So, again, I invite you into a hospitality of spirit that welcomes the world to enter in, but once it has, that you take the time to think, to feel, to discern, and arrive at your own truth, which is valid and true. May it be so.